The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
When the birth control pill was first approved, it ushered in a sexual revolution. More than 60 years later, a French company is asking the FDA to approve an over-the-counter version at a very different time in America's history, just weeks after the overturning of Roe v. Wade. It comes as the Biden administration faces increased pressure to take action on reproductive rights issues, including potentially declaring a public health emergency over abortion.
Something I'm asked the folks, the medical people in the administration to look at, whether I have the authority to do that and what impact that would have.
But the administration says it will let the FDA dictate the timeline.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Anything we can to make sure that, life is somehow mitigated, right? That's a continuing story. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. Just weeks now, I guess, after the reversal of Roe v. Wade, there's a French company that's asking the FDA to approve an over-the-counter version of the birth control pill. I just find it striking as I hear these stories. I sit back and I'm thinking, there's such confusion. I mean, there are kids in high school, certain high schools, you can't get an aspirin without a parent's permission, right? But now you want over-the-counter, abortion pills? The Food and Drug Administration's received an application from this French company. I don't know the name of the company. But they want to approve a contraceptive drug for over-the-counter use. Thank you. Here it is. I'm pulling it up right now. HRA Pharma. That's what it is. HRA Pharma. It's the name of the company. You can be on the lookout for it. They've gone through 7 years of testing with this drug. And Opill, which is what the FDA requires when applying for over-the-counter usage, they have to have this, the criteria that they ultimately want. Their drug is a progestin-only drug, unlike a lot of the American drugs that are out there that are both estrogen and progestin. But this is just an application for now. But still, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to pray against it personally. I already did. I offered a prayer when I saw the story, that God would protect life and really take the scales off the eyes of so many people in this country who are so blind to this reality. It could take a while before the FDA actually approves it, although there will be significant political pressure on the agency to do that. I can guarantee you that, especially after the Dobbs decision. It's one of the things that the president has, of course, promised, right? The decision, though, is going to bring out all kinds of hysteria. President Biden, did you see his press conference? I had the chance to watch when he announced the signing of these executive orders, right? And if you haven't, go back, you can watch it. In his press conference, he told a story. And again, don't go back and watch it. It's quite disturbing, to be honest with you. And I thought, apparently somebody's writing this stuff for him. But he told a story about a 10-year-old girl from Ohio who was pregnant and was 6 weeks and 3 days along and had to be taken to Indiana for an abortion because of Ohio's heartbeat law. There's only one problem with the story. As horrible as it is, it's not true. So after he used that illustration, right, this girl needing to flee to Ohio so she can abort this child, she's only 10 years old. The Attorney General of Ohio and others, they dug into that story. They thought, wow, it's a pretty powerful story. They did a fact check on it. Take a listen to this from Real America's Voice.
Just last week, it was reported that a 10-year-old girl was a rape victim in Ohio. 10 years old. And she was forced to have to travel out of the state to Indiana to seek to terminate the pregnancy and maybe save her life. That's last part is my judgment. 10 years old. 10 years old. Raped, 6 weeks pregnant, already traumatized, was forced to travel to another state. Imagine being that little girl. Just, I'm serious. Just imagine being that little girl. 10 years old.
Here's the problem with it. Dr. Caitlin Bernard, an Indianapolis obstetrician-gynecologist, claimed a child abuse doctor referred her to a 10-year-old patient who was pregnant and seeking an abortion a few days past Ohio's new 6-week limit. The story was published in the Cincinnati Inquirer and then quickly picked up by Politico, CNN, Teen Vogue, The Washington Post, and others. none of which independently verified the claim, apparently. Here's the problem. Bernard's account had no specifics, did not mention the name of the young patient's doctor, any of the towns where these events allegedly took place, whether charges were being pressed against the child's alleged rapist, and at what point, if at all, Bernard or the child abuse doctor contacted the authorities regarding an arrest for the person who impregnated a 10-year-old. Those would all be pretty salient facts, now wouldn't they?
Yeah, they certainly would be. It's a sad story. Really is. It wasn't true. The president led with it. And it does sound horrible. You know, rape, 10 years old, you know, 6 weeks pregnant. What's this girl going to do? And that's often what you hear, right? Rape and incest, people are much more tolerable of rather than just killing a child outright. The attorney general could find no information about the case at all, which was originally put forward by an abortionist who, by the way, has a problem with not reporting underage rapes to the authorities. And under Ohio law, she's a mandatory reporter. She has to report. Not telling the authorities about a 10-year-old girl being raped, that's a violation of the law. So there's a lot to this story. Again, the president doesn't write this stuff. He just reads it. But you would hope he would at least read through some of the stuff before he read it off the teleprompter and said, is this story real? This is horrible, right? He just did his own little fact check. But read it. It's out there, and we'll see what comes from it. But, you know, I wonder how many other stories you heard where it went, CNN, Teen Vogue, places like that. How many people are writing and doing a follow-up on the story to say, hey, that by the way, that story the president told, the story we reported on, not true. We apologize. A little mistake on our part for not doing our due diligence. That's not going to happen, right? No way. That story's out there. They want it out there. They want people to think that's a real story. How horrible, right? Because people get passionate behind that. So I just want you to know the truth because I think we might have even ran some of the president's audio that day, the day that it was released. And I always want to be clear with you. I always want to be truthful. I want you to be in the know on these issues. And some of the things we talk about aren't always pleasant. Quite often, you know, when I lead the show, I try to bring you up to speed on some of the big news stories of the day, just so you are in the know on what's now unfolding. And the issue of Dobbs and of life and of these issues have been predominant recently. There'll be other stories, of course, that will take over at some point. But we need to have the truth so that when we engage with others who are misinformed, we can, you know, we can put things in the proper context. I've talked a lot about the pandemic over the past 2 years. I don't know how your kids are doing or how your grandkids are doing, if that's where they are right now. I'm very concerned about anxiety. I can't tell you how many people I know who are in their 20s, in their teens, even later, adults who are struggling with anxiety. Kids have the highest anxiety levels, you know, that they've seen in recent days. It's quite amazing. In fact, there were a couple comments made from school counselors. New York Times did a survey. Let me share with him just a couple of these. This one counselor says, I've seen more physical fights this year than in my 15 years combined. Another counselor says, kids have the highest level of anxiety I've ever seen, anxiety about basic safety and fear of what could happen. There's uncertainty about the future, right? There's tremendous uncertainty. And they say, this has been exacerbated after the pandemic. According to the Times, nearly all the counselors, 94%, said their students were showing more signs of anxiety and depression than before the pandemic. You know, if your kids are going through that, please get them help. You know, 88% said students were having trouble regulating their emotions. And when you're a teenager already, I think you have problems doing that. But almost three quarters of them said they're having real difficulty solving conflicts with friends. And just one or two more stats here. 72% of counselors reported students regularly break classroom rules. 67% reported signs of low self-esteem. And 59% reported students having trouble making friends. That's the effect of the lockdown and the pandemic on our children so far. A lifelong Democrat said she's upset with the president. In blue areas, kids are far from normal due to lockdown, she says. This is according to an interview that was done yesterday. This was on Fox News. Check this out.
Well, I'm a lifelong Democrat. I voted for Biden. I believed him when he said that kids would be back to normal and school would be fully reopened within the first 100 days. And here we are a year and a half into his presidency. And in blue areas like where I live in New York City, kids are far from normal. There's no attempt to even try to restore normalcy for these kids. They're anxious, they're depressed, they're suicidal. There are vaccine mandates that are keeping kids from playing sports in New York City, and I know across parts of California, and there's mask mandates still being enforced in random parts of New York and California in schools, private schools, etc. Contrasted with, I'm in England visiting family, and the entire country has moved on. People have begun to heal. Kids are out and doing field trips with their schools. You see laughing. You see joy, and I'm wondering what the president plans to do about our children's mental health problem, because it's just getting worse.
It's just beginning. It really is. I saw a fascinating statistic to it. Maybe I'll talk about it a little bit later regarding worry. Anxiety and worry, scripture tells us, will not add a cubit to your life, right? Christ forbids us from worrying. The essence of the Divine Mercy devotion, really a large part of it, is this message of trust, how much the Lord wants us to trust. I think we've lost. I think anxiety's high in American households because God is absent from a lot of them. Not that good Christian families don't have kids that struggle with anxiety. They do. It's in the culture, and there's a lot of factors to it. But I think when you do have God in your life, when you are in a relationship with Jesus, things change, and they change radically. Fear diminishes. You know, peace increases. Anxiety decreases. There's hope. So, if you've been away from church for a long time, and maybe you have been, and you're not taking your kids, do your kids a favor, parents. Maybe this Sunday, get back. If you're Catholic, get the confession too. Tell you what, you'll be surprised at the dark, sinful, demonic residue that is removed, and how different you feel, and how different your emotions are, how different your worldview is. One final story here too, I'll share with you. I want to talk about God's time. We might be seeing right now a real push to eliminate semi-annual time changes. I don't know how you feel about them. My wife asked me the other day. We were, after the show, it was finished dinner, and we were sitting outside, and she said, are days getting shorter? I said, yeah, they certainly are. Every day now, it'll get darker just a little bit earlier. Well, Mexico's president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, he submitted a bill to his country's parliament and would eliminate the time change altogether. And his health minister says it was time to go back to God's time, where our biological clocks are aligned with the seasonal changes. But here in the States, right, the Senate, they unanimously passed a bill that would make daylight saving times permanent. The U.S. Senate permanently passed, or unanimously passed, I should say, a bill that would make daylight savings times permanent. The House has yet to act on it. I don't know how that will shake out, but I saw a piece, I think it was Catholic News Agency, where one group opposed to the change, believe it or not, is Orthodox Jews. Under their law, morning prayer starts with sunrise, and they can't do work until after that prayer. So if daylight saving times, prevailed in the winter, they wouldn't be able to pray to about, 9 a.m., something like that. Imagine the disruptions that would cause. So it's not clear if the House will take up the Senate's bill. But something I always am fascinated by, because, these clock changes have real effects on everything from, our mood and our sleep. They say even the car accidents. So we talk about it just about twice a year when we spring up and fall back. So we'll see how that ultimately shakes out. Hey, I want to change gears if I can. I want to talk a little bit about some of these church situations that we're seeing that have been vandalized. I followed this for well before it's been even reported, because I saw what happened in Rwanda, Africa. Here in our country, we're hearing more and more about churches being vandalized. Every time one happens, I try to make you aware of it. Four churches in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, they were graffitied over the weekend. I don't know if you're aware of that or not. One was in a tiny little town of Tilden. Population is about 1,400 people in it. There were three churches in Bethesda, Maryland, where They were also hit, including, you know, one Catholic church you're going to hear more about on this Thursday. I'm going to actually speak to a priest where there was a horrible act of arson in his church. But today there was a hearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee on what's happening since Dobbs. And as, you know, the National Review reported, the director of alternative pregnancy centers in California, Heidi, I think her name is Matsky, she told the senators that she had to spend $150,000 on installing cameras and anti-graffiti paint, reinforcing doors, putting in bulletproof walls, hiring 24-hour security, arming their staff with pepper spray. That money could have been spent, she said, on diapers, could have been spent on formulas, could have spent on helping those women who really needed the most, close with their clients. But that may not matter that much. Certain senators, I don't know if it matters to them because it doesn't seem to matter to law enforcement, right? There's a story, and we're going to speak right now to my next guest, Tom Brekka. You'll appreciate his story. The FBI said that they were undertaking an investigation, and nothing's happened so far. There was an incident that I think is a little more than problematic. Vandals actually targeted this man's home. Okay, his name's Tom Brekka. He founded the Thomas More Law Society, and he's been at the forefront of pro-life litigation for many years, including defending David Dalyden. He's been on the program in the past. I know you're probably familiar with the name. Well, there's a group out there called Reproductive Justice Union. Okay, maybe that's a new one for you, right? The RJU, Reproductive Justice Union. And they assembled 40 to 50 different members. And they gathered on the night of July 1st in front of Tom's house. And they chanted. They screamed obscenities. They took an American flag and they tore it up, right? They even went onto his property and they uprooted a rose bush that his wife had planted. Right? Then, it's not over yet, right? You know what they did next? They threw smoke bombs. They surged onto the lawn. They hurled paint bombs at the brick front of the house, onto his porch, onto the door. And it was this, they just didn't throw paint. They threw indelible green paint. Indelible green paint. Now just imagine, I know how hard you work on your house. I know how hard I work to keep the lawn, the flower beds, whatever. The house looking great. Maybe you power wash it. Maybe you paint it. Imagine having your home just graffitied with indelible green paint. And then graffiti on the sidewalk, on your driveway. And look, it's obscenities that these people are writing. They're anarchist symbols, ugly slogans like "No gods, no rulers." "Abort the Supreme Court" was another one of the slogans they put there. And I think they went through his neighborhood too, telling the neighbors that he was responsible for helping overturn Roe v. Wade. The really galling thing about this, and I don't understand. We'll talk to Tom in a few minutes. Supposedly the police were there, right? They stood by and they watched. They watched it all happen. I find it hard to believe. So I've invited Tom Brekka to join me, and I'm going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk to him and find out what happened and why this was allowed to take place. Why would law enforcement stand by when you're seeing, without question, horrific acts of vandalism and property destruction? We'll look at that and more. All right. Stay with me, too. We got a really full show. We got a lot coming up. Some of the things we'll look at is now that Dobbs was ruled on and Roe was overturned, how safe is so-called same-sex marriage? We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
His power is made perfect in our weakness. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Amen to that. All glory to God, right? It's good to be with you today. I'm Drew Mariani. It's so good to talk with you. And as always, I just try to put my finger on the pulse of what's happening. I'm a cultural observer. I like to report the facts, give you truth, shine the light of our faith on all that is unfolding in your world, and came across a story that I just think needs to be told. It's a story of Tom Brekka, and as I shared with you a few moments ago, I went through some of the details that were happening. Tom founded the Thomas More Law Society. He's been on the forefront of pro-life litigation for years, including, you know, defending David DeLayden, and he's been targeted. After Roe has, you know, been overturned, as Dobbs's decision came out, if you're just joining me, this man's home was vandalized. It was attacked, more than just attacked. I mean, we're talking about smoke bombs, people surging on those lawns, onto his lawn, hurling indelible paint bombs on his house, staining the property, graffitiing the driveway and the walkway with these ugly slogans that are there. And I can only imagine how terrifying that must be. You know, we talked about the Supreme Court justices, you know, and the protests were out there. Well, they had law enforcement out there. Well, Tom did too. The police were sitting right outside watching everything. No arrests were made. No one has been held accountable, at least not yet. Why? I mean, that's the question I have. You know, why didn't the police intervene? Clearly, there's property destruction going on before them. You know, horrific acts of vandalism. You know, threats were made. So what happened? Tom joins me right now to share a little bit of his story. And I know he believes that this is probably proof that the radical abortion partisans are going to stop at absolutely nothing to get vengeance and to intimidate and to try to promote their dark agenda. Tom, it's good to have you with me today. Good afternoon.
Well, yes, thank you very much, Drew. Good to be with you.
Boy, it's an amazing story. I got to be honest. When I heard the story and I read the story, I was talking to somebody about it. I said, I don't understand. There's got to be more to the picture than meets the eye. I can't imagine police in their cars or on their bicycles watching people uproot your wife's rose bushes and destroy your property. I'd be outraged. Were you home when it happened? And give us some perspective. Tell us your story.
Well, let me get right to the point. I guess it was the end of June, the day before this happened. We had a knock on the door, and there was an Evanston police officer telling us they'd been alerted by the FBI that on Twitter there was an effort going to organize a protest at our house, and it was going to happen, you know, the next night. And he advised that we not be home. He said that would be provocative. He said there would be a major police presence there, and I guess there was. We were, of all places, Drew, we went up to a dinner party in Highland Park where, you know, there was some terrible violence on the holiday. Debbie, my wife, taught school there for many years, not too far from our house at Evanston, and when we did come home after the dinner party to kind of see what was going on, we had cameras put in temporarily, and I think we'll have to make them permanent. And we could see there were a lot of people in front of the house. By the time we drove by, police were just leaving. But it's hard to say what happened. We heard reports from our neighbors that, in fact, there were 40 to 50 people. They were masked in front of the house. The police were in their squad cars, but I think they were inhibited maybe by too generous an understanding of the First Amendment. You know, yeah, residential right. Picketing it's permitted, but it's only in the neighborhood. You're not supposed to focus on any one person's residence. And of course, that's an issue with the Supreme Court justices, where the Marshal of the Supreme Court has criticized the police in Maryland and Virginia for allowing stationary folks, you know, in front of the houses of
but
these justices.
Here's the thing, Tom. I mean, you can protest, yeah, and I'm all for that. I think that's fantastic. If you want to do that peacefully, to throw indelible paint, to destroy your property, to throw smoke bombs, that's not, you know, to me, that's not protesting. You know, that's property damage, and it's domestic terrorism in some respects. I mean, those are terroristic threats. I'd be afraid for my life if 50 people came outside and began to attack my home. I mean, that's That's just a step too far. What did the police say? Why weren't there any arrests made? They just because they misinterpreted the First Amendment?
You know, we weren't thinking about arrests at the time, but in retrospect, we raised the same question. Yeah. We're making a police report. We have a video of the crowd. And I we need these police to protect us. I don't want to go to war with them. But
no, I agree.
I think a better understanding.
I'm a champion of our police department and police. They did a rough job today, and we all owe them a great debt of gratitude for their yes to that vocation and that mission. But they also have to be held accountable. And I seldomly point the finger at them. But when I heard your story, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm saying I must be missing something that they would allow something like this to take place. It's just. It's ridiculous. My initial thought was this. I mean, what are you doing as a result of this? Does the insurance company cover all the damage to the home? Are you thinking about suing the police or the city for allowing this to happen? What's your next step?
Well, I think our next step is to pursue, peaceably and non-combatively our Evanston police. They made an effort. Commander talked to us before and after it happened and, said that sounded, I guess, like they were taken by surprise. And they used our garden hose to try and get some of the paint off. Some of it came off, but no, we had to have... We're still engaged in a cleanup process. I think they need a better understanding of the need to protect... and the neighbors were very upset.
So concerned, the group also... The group passed flyers around your neighborhood, right? What did they say?
Well, they gave me much too much credit, Drew, for overturning Roe v. Wade. We've represented at the Thomas More Society protesters, Joe Scheider, for 28 years.
Sure.
They charged the pro-life movement. They said up to 1 million people were co-conspirators under the racketeering law, of all things. It took 28 years and 3 trips to the U.S. Supreme Court. So, yes, I suppose that had an impact on Roe v. Wade being overturned. And the credit goes to the protesters who, kept at it and didn't give up and weren't intimidated and weren't discouraged. And they were discouraged often, but, we had so many rebuffs. But they kept up the pressure. And I think finally it had a lot to do with President Trump appointing the justices who were true to, their Christian values and their conservative values. And this event happened. And I think it's really unleashed, it's torn away, stripped away the constitutional veneer protecting this abortion right, and I think people are now seeing it for what it is. It's organized industrial scale killing of unborn human beings, and so the other side is reacting with violence, and that's what abortion is all about. I think the truth is clear.
I agree. The mask has come off. Final thought here. The attack on your home, it really is just one of a number of instances that are taking place nationwide. The USCCB has been chronicling how many attacks on Catholic churches. There have been 49-50 crisis pregnancy centers across the country. All this since the Dobbs decision was leaked and ultimately came down. Pregnancy centers, churches, it's going to continue. What do you see for the future? Will this mitigate? Will it kind of fuse out? I mean, how do you see it? What do you see happening in the not-too-distant future?
Well, we're already representing a lot of these pregnancy resource centers in New York, looking into Massachusetts. The other side is trying to... Well, they say pro-lifers don't care about human beings after they're born. And, of course, the pregnancy resource centers are doing precisely that and trying to help women with their infants. And now they're trying to shut them down. And so we're challenged and we're trying to gear up. We're in, now 50 state battlegrounds, not just at the federal level. And I think here we go. We're as determined as ever to keep up this fight. Abortion is not over in blue states like Illinois and New York.
That's true.
Connecticut. We're backing away to square one. And yes, we're emboldened and determined, but this is an uphill battle, and we're going to keep at it.
I'm with you, Tom. Keep up the good fight. Appreciate what you've done over the years, and sorry, truly, as to what has happened to your family and to your household, but we're with you, and look forward to the next time you and I can talk again. Thanks for making time for me.
Thank you, Drew, very much. Bye-bye.
Okay, that's Tom Brekka. I've got to leave it right there, but, you know, it really is indicative of what we are seeing, and he's right. The battle continues. It's not over. I mean, Roe has fallen, thank God, and thank God that you and I saw this in our lifetime. Reality is, it's now at the state level. We're seeing radical states, you know, really doing everything they can, even willing to pay to have transportation and lodging costs for women to fly from another state just so they can kill their baby. It's macabre, it's sick, it's evil, it's dark. And really, the good news, as horrible as that sounds, is what the one exorcist said to me. He says, I really believe that things are changing, that Satan has lost power. When Roe fell, and when states now no longer allow abortion, that blood sacrifice, that human sacrifice, that dark sacrament no longer being practiced in those states, Satan's furious. He's lost a lot of power. And look, evil always feeds on itself. It never stands. It always falls. So it might take a little bit longer. But one day, and I'll tell you this, you can mark my words, mark this day down. One day in this nation, life will be protected from the moment of conception through natural death. I'm convinced of that. It might take maybe another 50 years. I don't know. I hope a lot less than that. But I'm convinced of it. We'll look back on these days and think, my gosh, how could these politicians, how can these educators, how can these people be so crazy? How can they be so misguided, misinformed? It's a darkness. But this is a great nation. God has an anointing on America. I'm convinced of it. And one day we will respect life at all stages. Hey, I want to change gears, share with you another story. This coming from the Department of Education and religious exemptions. I said when marriage was redefined, you know, we had abortion legal in this country, now we redefined marriage. The next attack, and it was only logical, it would be an attack on religious liberty in our country. I think today is the 50th anniversary, or this month is, of the passage of Title IX, that law that prohibits discrimination based on sex and educational institutions that receive federal money, right? So that law is now getting a lot of attention lately because, well, the Biden administration changed the definition of what sexual discrimination is. they're masterful. I have to step back and again say they're brilliant when it comes to co-opting words. And I talk to you about this all the time. I mean, really, words are so powerful. They've redefined sexual discrimination to include discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Now, that, of course, is problematic, right? When someone like William Thomas goes by Leah Thomas, swims for great institution, I think it was University of Penn he was swimming for, crushing the women's records because, you know, she was a he was really a man swimming against these women. Up until now, Title IX had an important exemption in it for religious institutions. You know, under the law, Title IX doesn't apply to educational institutions, which is controlled by a religious organization, but only to the extent that its religious tenets conflict with Title IX. So, for example, just to kind of decode what I said there, if a particular church requires segregation of men and women, then they're not required to follow this law. But there's something going on that might be putting that exemption right now in jeopardy. The most recent draft of Title IX regulations, it removes a previous provision that told educational institutions that they could be assured of getting this exemption as long as they wrote, you know, the education department telling them why certain provisions violate religious tenets. But the current draft removed that. It didn't tell the religious institutions about the proposed change or provide justification for it. So I want to talk a little bit about it. What does it mean? You know, why is a religious exemption there in the first place? You know, if this proposed change goes forward, What's that mean for Catholic colleges and universities are trying to be faithful to the church's teaching on sexuality? Those are important questions. You know, the current regulation requires religious schools to tell the education department which part of Title IX violates its tenets. So how is the education department to decide whether or not those religious tenets are okay? Very confusing stuff. I only have a few moments today with Dr. Edward Bartlett. He is the founder of Stop Abusive and Violent Environments, which you can find online at saveservices.org. He joins us today to help us kind of sort through all this. Doctor, thank you for your time. I'm very grateful for it. It's good to have you here today.
My pleasure to be with you this afternoon.
Thank you. I know you're just joining me now. I was talking a little bit about the education department, these religious exemptions, and maybe it's hard for people to follow. Maybe you can give us a thumbnail of them and how the Biden administration's changes to Title IX have been implemented. Is it now the law or the regulation that sex discrimination includes sexual orientation and gender identity? It seems very confusing.
Well, it is. It's not just confusing, actually. It's this whole law. This is the law that was designed to ban sex discrimination in schools, which, of course, is a very good idea. Nobody argues with that basic proposition. But what's happened in the last 10 years is that Title IX has become politicized and then it's become weaponized. And so we have this very recently introduced regulation by the Biden Department of Education that just blows your hair off. It is so wild. And so, like you just mentioned, it proposes to expand, to rework the definition of sex. And I'll actually quote what it says. Yeah. To include sex stereotypes, sex characteristics, pregnancy, sexual orientation, and gender identity. Wow. Just imagine all the mischief that will come from that.
I can't even imagine. I mean, we already live in a time of great disorientation. Current regulation requires religious schools to tell the education department which part of Title IX it violates, if I'm correct, right? Which part of its Title IX violates religious tenets. So is it up to the education department to decide whether or not religious tenets are okay? Who makes that decision?
So currently, and as you say, right now the Title IX law has what's known as the religious exemption. And it basically means that if you have a religious school that, for example, does not allow same-sex people to share a dormitory room together, well, the school can enforce that, even though it could potentially violate the Title IX policy. So that's in place right now. But we're worried that the Biden administration will seek to weaken or possibly completely eliminate the religious exemption. And that, of course, that would be a disaster for every religious school around the country.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about that for a minute, because that's a lot of people want to send their kids to schools where they'll be well-formed and there's a certain, you know, moral fiber that runs through the institution. What does this mean for Catholic colleges and universities who are trying to remain faithful to the church's teaching on human sexuality?
Well, it simply means that the Department of Education, if, you know, again, this has not happened, but it's a concern, that if the Department of Education removes the religious exemption, then it's all bets are off in terms of the religious school being able to have its own rules about transgenders, about, you know, dormitory arrangements, even about biblical teachings. I mean, think about how far this could go.
Yeah.
Yep. The Bible teaches about there's two sexes, male and female. Well, I mean, who knows how the Department of Education would try to interfere with that fundamental biblical teaching.
Hey, man, I'm with you on that. So final thought here. I'm assuming that if these changes happen, there's a lawsuit waiting to be filed. How do you think it's going to do in the courts? And, you know, what do you see for the future of this?
All right, let me explain what happened. So literally today, the draft regulation was published in what's called the Federal Register, and that's the official you know, record of the U.S. government, and that includes the information for people to submit comments or complaints to the Department of Education. So that literally happened today, and so there'll be a 60-day comment period. Then, once that 60 days ends, the Department of Education is required by law to carefully review every comment, and, well, hopefully they'll be respectful and give due consideration to the comments, but not everybody has full faith that that will actually happen. So if the Department of Education marches forward with this very radical plan, yes, there will be lawsuits. I'm absolutely certain of that. In fact, 20 attorneys general have already filed a lawsuit.
Wow.
against this policy, and that's just for starters. So, yeah, we're in for a pretty wild ride over the next. Probably this is going to play out over the next few years.
Well, keep up the good fight, Doctor. I'm grateful for all that you're doing. I know you're the founder of Stop Abusive Violent Environments. Best way to find you, saveservices.org. Did I get that right?
That is correct. We have a whole page all about this. So feel free to visit our page and submit comments to the Department of Education.
I think it's fantastic. Keep up your good work, Doctor. I'm sure we'll talk again, okay?
All right. Thank you much. Be in touch.
You got it. That's Dr. Edward Bartlett. And go to that website, saveservices.org. You can learn much more about it. And as he said, send your comments to the Department of Education. Let them know what you think. And you can sound off. So often we hear these stories and we do nothing. We think, oh, that's really horrible. I can't believe the direction the country is going, right? We decry all that's swirling around us. You can do a couple things. I'm a believer in the power of prayer and sacrifice to change things. But that's got to be accompanied by action. I think it's our prayer and sacrifice that animates our action. You know, it brings it to life. It amplifies the force of our message and our action. So go ahead and do that. I'm going to take a short break. When we come back, I was at Mass this morning, right? I heard a homily, and I heard a statistic that absolutely both made me smile and surprised me. I thought, why didn't I ever hear this stat before? You know, I always talk about trust, right? I talk about worry. In fact, we talked about it at the very beginning of the show. When I come back, I'll share a stat that might change your worldview and your situation. Maybe you're concerned right now about your finances, your health, your relationship, your kids, whatever it might be. Maybe you're worried. I'll share something I just learned today. I'm going to pass along with you when I return.
Live, coast to coast, the Drew Mariani Show is on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Somehow it doesn't mean very much unless you've got someone to share it with.
This is the Drew Mariani Show, the Chaplet of Divine Mercy, coming up next.
Yeah, can't wait to pray with you. It'll be great. Thanks for joining me. And why don't you do somebody else a favor? Perform an act of mercy. Tell them about the chaplet. Say, hey, about 10, 15 minutes, we're going to pray together. This is a time where people all over the nation and around the world gather. They invoke God's mercy, and miracles are reported every day. I mean, we have incredible healings and wonderful answers to prayers. And I know a lot of changes are set in motion. Not everything is instant. Sometimes that prayer you're asking for is going to take a little bit of time. And I know that's hard, too, isn't it? I mean, it can be difficult. It's stressful. It really is. I mean, look, it's human for us to get anxious and to worry about our situation. You worry, oh, my child's sick, or my husband, you know, I'm worried about my relationship, my marriage. You know, what if I get sick? I'm the sole provider. You know, what if I don't pass this test? Whatever happens, right? I mean, I can give you a whole litany of things that are going on. I was at Mass earlier today, and I was thinking about this. The homily today, I thought was really on point. There was a stat that I came across, it just struck me. The priest shared this. He said that 85% of what we worry about never happens. Never happens. 500 years ago, there was a guy named Michel de Montaigne, and he wrote this. He quoted this guy. He says, this guy said, my life has been filled with terrible misfortune, most of which never happened, right? And I love that line. Okay, you have to think about that. My life's been filled with terrible misfortune, most of which never happened. Think about the things you are worried about right now, the things that loom in your future. Oh, my gosh, what if my loved one gets cancer? What if I can't pay this bill? What if my job gets rid of me? What if, what if, what if? Worry appears to be second nature to us. I get it, right? I do. I totally get it. It's a natural human emotion, and it has merit, but it can be a hindrance. And Scripture tells us not to worry. The Message of Divine Mercy is very clear on this as well. Many of us worry about money. That's probably the number one concern, right? Health, relationship, work. Those concerns are valid, but they don't, you know, your worry does nothing for it. The good news is, 85% of this will never, ever take place. There was a study that proves it. And you're thinking, where did that number come from? In this study, they did the study. They asked people to write down their worries over an extended period of time and then identify which of those imagined misfortunes did actually happen. And lo and behold, it turned out that about 85% of what subjects worried about never happened. 15% did happen. But 79% of the subjects discovered that they could handle the difficulty better than they expected, or it wasn't as bad as they thought, as they imagined, right? And the difficulty, the cross that they carried, the struggle that they went through, on the other side of it, they said they're glad they went through it. It made them stronger. They learned an important lesson from it. And according to the study, they said that 97% of what you worry over is not much more than your fearful mind punishing you with exaggeration and misperceptions. So just write that number down today, 85%, the 85% rule. I know you're stressed. I know you're anxious. I know you're saying, Drew, I'm in that 15% category. I say, no, you're not. I say, you're in the 85% category. Winston Churchill once said, he says, when I look back on all these worries, he says, I remember the story of the old man who said on his deathbed that he had had a lot of trouble in his life, most of which never had happened. Just like the man who lived 500 years ago. And I think you'll say the same thing. You will say the same thing. By the way, that study, I think it was Cornell University that did this. It was researchers from that institution. It's a very reputable institution. And they did it over a period of time. So it's not like, there's some abstract group, some small study number. It was pretty significant. So I'm going to leave you with that as we get ready to pray, as we get ready to turn to the Lord, as we get ready to trust. The more a soul trusts, the more it will receive. That's what St. Faustina has told us over and over again. In fact, she promised. And today, let's turn to St. Faustina, all right? We'll turn to her in a particular way and ask her for her intercession, because she promised that her mission would continue after her death. That's why we pray this beautiful prayer. She says, I will pull back the veils of heaven. I will pull back the veils of heaven so that you will no longer wound with your distrust the most lovable heart of Jesus. And she would say over and over again that a humble soul doesn't trust itself, but rather places its confidence in God. And that's a problem for you. It's a problem for me, right? So often, I can figure this out. I can get it done. This is the way it has to be done. A humble soul realizes that God's in control of everything. It places itself in the hands of God, and it trusts him completely. And that's what I want you to do now as we move forward and begin to pray the Chapel of Divine Mercy. If you want to join me, it's 888-914-9149. It's 888-914-9149. I try to take 5, 6, maybe 7 calls if I'm lucky to go ahead and do that. And if you get through, I'll do my best to get you on. You can also right now put up your intentions at our Twitter account. Okay, it's @DrewMariani Show, and we'll go ahead and take those prayer intentions there. The other thing the Lord said that, and this is regarding Saint Faustina and what he said to her, and I love her revelation. She's a saint that I think has chosen me. I haven't chosen her. I stumbled into her, but boy, the spirituality of Divine Mercy is life changing. It reduces your anxiety. It amplifies your prayers. In diary entry, I think it was 1578, Faustina was writing about the graces of mercy and how they're drawn down. And they're often drawn down by, she said, one vessel. That's trust, right? So that the more you trust, the more you receive. But the Lord went on to say to her after that particular message that I often quote, he said to her that souls that trust boundlessly, he says, you are a great comfort to me. You're a great comfort to me because I pour all the treasures of my grace into them. So can I ask you a quick question? Why aren't you trusting boundlessly? Why are you doing yourself a disservice? Why are you limiting the potential that lies before you? Those graces that God wants to pour into your heart. I pour all the treasures of my grace into those souls that trust boundlessly. Go ahead and worry. Go ahead and be anxious. Go ahead and fret. Go ahead and try to figure it out on your own. Right? It'll do zero for you. It won't move the needle one inch. It won't add a cubit to your day or to your life. Trust works miracles. Trust is what opens the floodgates of God's mercy. A soul that trusts boundlessly in the mercy of God is not only a comfort to him, but he promises you he will pour all the treasures of his grace into you. Let's go to that ocean of mercy now, and we'll pray together the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.